Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
This year marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of composer Samuel Barber. Born in Westchester, Pennsylvania, Barber studied at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia and went on to become one of the most important, prolific, and beloved composers of the 20th century. In deference to Samuel Barber's centennial, many artists have put together programs to honor him. Westchester University of Pennsylvania's College of Visual and Performing Arts is presenting a week of special concerts. And later on in the program, we'll be speaking with cellist Ovidiu Marinescu, pianist Carl Cranmer, and baritone Randall Scarlatta. Mr. Scarlatta also performed with our guests Mimi Stillman, flutist, and pianist Charles Abramovic of the Dolce Suono Ensemble. Dolce Suono held two tribute concerts, one in January and one in February, featuring some of Barber's most well-known instrumental and vocal chamber works. And I'm delighted to welcome two of my favorite people, flutist Mimi Stillman and pianist Charles Abramovic.
Thank you, Jill.
Now, we're a little bit after the fact with you, although Barber is never after the fact, I guess, and you had already done your tribute to him. It's what it is, his 100th birthday, is that what it is?
Yes, the Dolce Suono Ensemble, of which I'm artistic director and Charlie and I are core players, kicked off our Samuel Barber at 100, the composer and his world project, with two concerts, one in January and one in February, celebrating the composer's chamber works.
You also have celebrated some other anniversaries, but we'll talk about that at another time. It's a very busy year, isn't it? Haydn, is it, and Handel as well?
Charles? Right, that was last year.
Yeah.
There's Barber and Schumann this year, right?
But yes, Schumann, definitely. Right. Lots of Schumann around. Now, Barber, okay. As a flutist, Mimi, you have some very virtuosic work that you're playing, or you have played on these concerts, and you're playing on today's program.
Yes, as a flutist, I've always loved and appreciated Barber's chamber works with flute, the Canzone for flute and piano, which Charlie and I just played in studio here, the Summer Music Wind Quintet, and the Capricorn Concerto for the unusual combination of flute, oboe, trumpet, and strings. But my goal with this project was really to highlight as many of the important chamber works by Barber as possible, because our two concerts also included Dover Beach for baritone and string quartet with baritone Randall Scarlatta, and the string quartet and songs and souvenirs for two pianos, and the unpublished Song for a New House by Barber as well.
Is there a story to that?
Oh, Mimi has a great story, I think, about the unpublished song. Yes.
Well, I was delighted to discover that it existed through my conversations with Barber biographer Barbara Heyman. And it's really a song that Barber wrote to welcome Mary Curtis Bach, his friend and founder of Curtis Institute of Music, into her new home on Delancey Street. And so it's a song for voice and flute and piano with text from Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. And we just found it a lot of fun to play and very whimsical.
Has that been done before? Was that a find?
It was pretty much a find. Well, certainly for me. We had never done it before, and because it's not published, it's not very often played.
Now, we also think of Barber as doing much orchestral music as well, but you are, of course, chamber players. Now, Charlie, you had a very interesting experience with the souvenirs, though.
Right.
One of my favorite works.
It was a great piece. It's for a piano duet, a piano four hands at one piano. And I'd often used it for my students for piano ensemble work, but I had the pleasure of playing on this concert with Charles Wadsworth, whose work promoting Barber's music, but also chamber music throughout the world, is so important, running the Spoleto festivals both in Charleston and also in Italy, Spoleto, Italy. Charles had actually worked with Samuel Barber in a performance he did with John Browning of these souvenirs, so it was really interesting to get his insights into the music, one of which was very interesting. One of Barber's favorite composers was Brahms.
Really?
And yes, so he loved the idea of playing his music more like Brahms and bringing out that really romantic side and very lush part. Of course, there's some great forehand music by Brahms as well. So it was really a lot of fun. And these are really entertainment type of pieces.
Charming.
Very charming. He writes in the preface that this can be heard almost as, say, a pianist in a hotel lobby of the Waldorf Hotel in New York, just playing these tangos and these waltzes. And it's just a wonderful piece.
Yeah, I think he wrote that originally for, was it Lincoln Kirstein, I believe. And they would attend these, you know, social gatherings, you know, as guests. And then they would say, oh, please play something. And they would sit down and they would just play this.
Right.
It has become very popular. You talk about lyricism and melodic line. I think that Barber has some of the most exquisite lines. Of course, I am very well acquainted with his orchestral music and concerti, but you have done quite a bit of research on the solo work, I guess, and also the chamber work. Now, what about solo piano? Does he have much repertoire?
There's a very famous sonata that he wrote. In fact, Horowitz has a famous recording of Barber's sonata, which has a infamous fugue in the last movement, which is quite difficult.
What is the number? Do you know? Is it
the opus number?
Yes.
Offhand, I don't know.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I think I remember hearing pianists talk about that.
Right. Very,
what
very
a devilish
difficult.
Thing it is.
Very exciting, and it's a fantastic recording by Horowitz of that sonata. It's become a real repertoire piece for pianists. He also wrote a group of four pieces called Excursions, which are short pieces. There's a blues movement. It's sort of more Americana type of music. Of course, there's great piano writing in the songs, which are
Of course, he was a pianist as well.
And also a very good singer, evidently.
Yes, and his, of course, Dover Beach is very, very well-known. I think it's one of the most well-known.
Right.
There's a wonderful recording of Barber himself singing Dover Beach with his beautiful baritone, which is quite inspiring. But yes, you had asked about the vocal connections, which is something that we feel strongly as wind players.
Yes.
And also through his writing in the canzone for flute and piano, which we just played here in studio, because originally Barber wrote it, he titled it Elegy for Flute and Piano, and wrote it for his friend, who was an amateur flutist, a German student called Manfred Eibel. And then later when he wrote his piano concerto, he took that movement and made it the canzone slow movement of the piano concerto.
Yes, so you were discussing that earlier too, Charlie,
right,
about the piano concerto.
Piano concerto is a major piece of the early 60s. And it's interesting because the slow movement is in between some very dissonant and very angular type of music, a little off what we normally think of as Barber, and then you have this beautiful, almost romantic slow movement.
But I think he does that. He does that even in the violin concerto. I mean, you hear this exquisite second movement, and then he goes to town, of course, virtuosically demanding. But I think that was his style, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is very
similar. He kind of was... He fooled you. You know, you thought, oh, I can do this, and then wow.
Right.
But this whole retrospective, this wonderful tribute that we are doing for this great composer, how do you place him? Charles, you're a teacher of music and here at Temple and piano and so on. And of course, Mimi too does master classes. But where would you put Barber in terms of not only American composers, but generally in the glossary of musicians, composers?
Right. Well, I think his music certainly has entered the repertoire and is every bit as important as figures like Copland or Bernstein. I think one of his close colleagues, Giancarlo Menotti, is also, I think, a composer that will probably start getting even more recognition for a while. His operas were
the greatest things.
I love Menotti personally.
Yes. Oh, well, I remember he came to school when I was a student, and he was very handsome. Mm-hmm. And he lived with Barber, I believe, and something like, they said, 9 cats.
That's interesting.
Yes, they lived out, I believe, in Long Island.
Right. I think Menotti wrote the libretti for the operas, Antony and Cleopatra.
Uh-huh.
And there's a short, really interesting comic opera called A Hand of Bridge, which is just about the suburban couple playing bridge and all these details of their various affairs start coming out as a really interesting period piece, I think, from the 1950s.
But, you know, he had a marvelous take on contemporary life.
He
was very serious, and then all of a sudden he would do something that would be very it was not cynical exactly, but it would be a commentary on life and the way people really are.
Right.
But he would couch it in these musical terms, which were very sophisticated.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so here we are. Just a quickie. You have done these two concerts, and these are two of a series of three. Is that right, Mimi, for the Dolce Suono?
It was actually a two-concert project that we did, two concerts, and then a conversation with pianist Charles Wadsworth and composer Benjamin Boyle, who we commissioned to write a work reflecting on Barber. So we have just completed the two concerts, and actually it was really meaningful for us to perform the first one at the Curtis Institute of Music, because it's our school for many of the musicians in the Dolce Suono ensemble, and of course it was Samuel Barber's alma mater where he also taught. So we were quite honored to be there paying homage to him.
Well, it's a delight to have you here participating in this special show, and we look forward to speaking with you further later on in the season about your great plans. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you very much, Jill.
Thanks.
Carl Cranmer is here with cellist and fellow faculty member and conductor at Westchester University, Ovidiu Marinescu. Mr. Marinescu.
So what a wonderful beginning for a concerto. And Barber decided to start with an incredible cadenza for the piano and then bring the orchestra in. How does it feel, Carl, when you just blast in, so to speak?
Well, it's a very majestic opening statement. And it's very interesting, just the harmonic language that he's using in the beginning. It's almost reminiscent of the first movement of the piano sonata, which is an atonal movement. It's based on a 12-note set. I don't think this is a 12-note set, but it is very, it's hard to tell where we're going harmonically. Although, technically, it's an E minor.
Yeah, yeah. I love Barber's language. It's so often is abrasive, but he doesn't copy anybody, and then he contrasts that with just the most beautiful melodies.
Well, yeah, I think the fact that he wrote the second movement first, which is a very, very tonal, very beautiful elegy. He wanted something to really contrast, to be almost diametrically opposed in character. So you have this melody opening, and then you have this tritone motive. And as you know, tritones have a very interesting association in the history of Western music. Started out as the devil's interval, but in general, it's used. It's a more dissonant interval, and we see this throughout the first movement of this concerto, and very often in the last movement as well. But this is just the beginning of a monstrous work for piano and orchestra, which was inspired by John Browning.
Barber had a composition premiered by the New York Philharmonic, and it was John Browning's debut. He was playing Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody in a Theme by Paganini, and so Barber was so impressed that when he started writing the piano concerto, he had Browning in mind and actually tailored the work to his technique.
Yeah, I guess some examples of that, specific examples of the Browning technique would be he was known for his blistering octaves, and we have several octave passages. Let me see if I can recall one. That's the opening, the end of the introduction of the first movement. So you have octaves, and then you also have sixths, which Browning diligently practiced throughout his career because he was a student, a pupil of Rosina Levine, who had a very specific technical regimen. So you see in the first movement, you see this happen in the exposition and in the recapitulation. He brings back these sixths, which I admit they were difficult to practice. And it's the second theme of the first movement. Here are the sixths. Mm-hmm. That
it's
happens
fun.
Twice.
He gets some great colors with his parallel motions, and it's so crystalline. And I think they fit best the piano. I wouldn't see the six played on another instrument. And
it's very pianistic. Yeah, I think Barber was an excellent pianist. And throughout, when he was composing this, he had John Browning to as a guinea pig to test out any passages that he'd compose. And he did take this to Horowitz also. There was a passage that, how many measures, maybe 16 or so measures in the last movement that he took out, just because they were too difficult. Of course, John Browning could have played them, Horowitz could have played them, but just for the average pianist that plays this with an orchestra, I think it was a good idea to take the passage out.
I want to ask you something. We haven't ever talked about it. What do you make of the five? There's so many quintuplets throughout the concerto. The second movement is in a 5-4. The third movement is just a crazy 5-8 that goes by so fast, tricky to conduct and especially tricky to play for the orchestra and line it up with the piano. What do you think about this? How do you feel when you play the fives?
You know, it's always I've performed this twice and with orchestra, and I think it's definitely a difficult task for the conductor and the pianist to keep everything together because you have a lot of solo instruments, and the 5-8 meter does make it difficult. You're either thinking in 3 or 2 or 2 and 3, and. Well, Barber is such a great composer. He's always mixing things up, and there's so much syncopation that there's several places where piano and orchestra are meant to be in stretto and not together, in a dialogue, and that makes it difficult. But the opening motive of the last movement just really it's very rhythmically compelling. This is the beginning of the third movement. Trombone solo that follows after
yes,
it.
Yeah. Well, I love your playing, and I think when we put it together first time, I remember you learned the whole concerto in 3 weeks. I know that John Browning got the third movement 2 weeks before the performance, and he just learned it apparently in a few days. But I think there is some parallelism there. Maybe you are connecting across generations. Why did you do it in 3 weeks? And how did you do it?
Well, I mean, you know, like most musicians, when you have an opportunity to play something concerto like this, you rise to the occasion. And luckily, you know, since we both teach at Westchester University, we were on break already. Yeah. So I devoted as many hours as possible to learning the piece. And the third movement was probably the most difficult, but... I think the most gratifying movement was obviously the
canzonetta,
the canzone, the elegy,
the
second movement.
You want to play a little bit?
Sure. It's a very beautiful movement. Apparently, compared to its original form, which was with flute and piano, he added maybe another how many measures? 28
About
measures. Where he makes a variation on that theme, and the piano goes into almost Rachmaninoff-like filigree along with the melody.
Beautiful section there.
Yeah, I'll play a little bit of it here. Thank you.
You could probably try, like Glenn Gould, hum while you play. You can speak slowly as you play. Right. Makes it for fun listening.
Right. Well, you know, this movement, I think all of the movements are very, very idiomatically written for the keyboard. You know, I think the most accessible movement is the second movement, although I think the first and third have their have really, really strong selling points with their energy and their rhythm. I just wanted to bring up the cadenza, which traditionally is it's to showcase the soloist. And this particular cadenza, again, it introduces a slew of different technical difficulties. One of them is the cluster chords, which you'll hear at the end, and many different types of finger work. But it's all based, it's a very organic cadenza. It's all based on themes you've heard previously in the movement.
It's in the first movement, right?
In the first movement.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun for a pianist.
Yeah. Great job.
Thank you.
We've been listening to a conversation between pianist Carl Cranmer and cellist and fellow faculty member and conductor Ovidiu Marinescu. And we are now joined by a third member of Westchester's faculty and a very fine soloist in his own right, Randall Scarlatta, baritone. Welcome, everybody, to Crossover.
Thank you, Jill.
We're just going to chat about the whole perspective of, music today and also where the university stands, a university stands, especially one that has a very strong music program, and what you are imparting to your students beyond your musical expertise. So, Ovidiu, you probably deal with many students because as the conductor of the symphony, you have another role. Do you also teach cello?
Yeah, sure. I teach cello and conduct the orchestra, teach some conducting classes, and we just started a master's in conducting program. So I have a chance, an opportunity to meet a large number of students from across the spectrum. Some of them are performance students, and many of them are music education students. However, at Westchester, we encourage everybody to play their hearts out and really be, first of all, an artist. And the career path that they take, be it a performer or somebody who would be a teacher in a public school, private school, they are all wonderful choices.
Now, you are Romanian. How long have you been here in the United States?
I came to the U.S. in 1991. I went to Milwaukee. And I arrived in Philadelphia in 93. I did a doctorate at Temple University, and I've enjoyed so much living in this area.
Well, you also have done an enormous amount. You've done your recording on your own as well, as a cellist, as a soloist, and also as a soloist with orchestras. The recordings that you made were made in Russia.
Yeah, most of my recordings, actually my first recording as a cellist was done in Philadelphia with George Blood as an engineer, and it was a cello and piano recording with Kenneth Bolton. But after that, I wanted to have some opportunities to work with the reputable orchestras, and I've established a relationship with a Russian Philharmonic Orchestra. My first recording with them was as a cellist. I did the Miaskovsky Cello Concerto. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, I was invited to conduct the orchestra, and my first city was a city of Tchaikovsky. And funny enough, at least from the standard business practice, is that when you record with the Russian Philharmonic, you don't get any rehearsing. You jump in the studio, you meet them, and you start recording. You have 12 hours for a CD, and you just work. And that's just a trial by fire.
We've just all blanched at that. I mean, and say, gentlemen, and...
Gentlemen, here you go. Time matters. And you go. That's how we recorded the Barber Piano Concerto with Carl. They practiced it a few days before. They are exceptional musicians. These are people who are educated at the Moscow Conservatory, most of them, and play two jobs, basically. They play a day job, and at night they, supplement their income playing for the Russian Philharmonic, and they record. So oftentimes they will rehearse 6, 7, 8 hours. But incredible professionals, and so we had the Barber Concerto, Piano Concerto, and we recorded two movements in one day.
No run through.
You run through at the beginning. You tell them what to do. You show it. You discuss passages,
but you don't play it. Measure five, measure A.
It's not
X,
much discussion.
Whatever.
There's not a lot of time to discussion.
They're prepared.
They are prepared.
Supposedly, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Carl.
I was very impressed by the fact that they could put a piece of such complexity together so quickly. It was great because I didn't know what to expect, but everything went so smoothly. It seemed like only a half an hour had passed, and it was an entire recording session, which was 6 hours.
Yeah. But what I don't understand is, do they ever have a conductor when they're rehearsing? They must, or are you as a guest conductor?
As a guest conductor, it was my responsibility to put together this recording.
So, but they obviously had rehearsed this.
No, they had not rehearsed
Never?
It.
Never? With anybody? Ever?
Some of them had played it. The piano, they told me the piano concerto had been played before in Moscow. I can remember probably Daniel Pollock, who
yes.
won the third prize at the first Tchaikovsky competition. He's invited often in Russia. He has a wonderful career there, and I believe he played the Barber Concerto there. So some of the musicians had played it once or twice. They had the music ahead of time, probably a few days, and they practiced their parts. But you have to, these are the highest caliber musicians.
But you must have certain interpretation that you have
sure.
to impart.
Sure. Well,
when do you do that?
You have to show it. You have to have the artistic, not only vision, but the power of really projecting that, the personality to project it. And, Russian musicians are really tough. They don't smile very often. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you have to stand there and sort of, it's like the dog whisperer, where it's a nonverbal communication. So that's how it goes, and you have to do it.
I thought it was really, commendable how you dealt with the Russian orchestra, because I know you know maybe 3 or 4 words of Russian, or maybe 20 words, and you were able to really get them within a few, just a few comments after the first run through. They made changes, and they were pretty dramatic. It was really exciting to be part of that. So,
music is an international language.
It is.
It's a cliche, but it's true. You really don't have to speak the language, but you have to have a run through. I mean, they put the...
Sure. You run through the movement and, they are testing volumes and sound mm-hmm. levels and mm-hmm. at that time. And then you run it again and then you start working. Exactly. You have, the exposition of the concerto and you play it once or twice and then or 3, 4 times. Treat a couple of small sections, then you move on, and at the end you do another run through the movement. So usually for 1 4-hour session, one expects to record about 20 minutes of music. Then the piano cadenzas, those are done separately. For example, the musicians go on break, which they have a very organized, well-organized union that protects
their... They do have a union.
Yes, yeah. And so the personnel manager will say, time for break. The musicians go out and smoke. Everybody smokes there. They go out. And then the soloist stays and records those moments. So it is no wasted second there.
Carl, how do you feel taking it out of context as a musician?
Taking the recording?
The recording. I mean, that they played and then you come in and you do your thing.
Well,
you those are the solo cadenzas.
Well, the more recordings you do, the more you realize that it's totally different than playing a concert. It's a completely different environment. And I'm comfortable with it at this point. I mean, I prefer, public concerts, but we all have to do recordings. It's just part of the business at this point for classical musicians. I guess there are some people that prefer that type, where they can really isolate sections. Like, for example, we did with the cadenza, like Lynn Gould, for example. Out of context, it didn't bother me because I basically think of music phrase by phrase. So putting it together and making it a unified whole is the job of all of us as when we listen to the recording after we've recorded and the producer of the recording. And I think he did a great job.
Now, Randall, you were also there. Randall Scarlatta, who is a baritone, very excellent artist. And now you are also on this recording with the Russian Philharmonic. What was the work? And tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, we actually recorded four orchestral songs, and we believe these are the world premiere recordings of those songs.
Wonderful.
And the one that I recorded is Monks and Raisins, which is a great, fun piece. You know, I thought it was quite remarkable that these Russian musicians, when we were putting this together, could get such a clear grasp of the American style. Which is, Samuel Barber's music certainly is very romantic and has some influence perhaps by Rachmaninoff in that grand sort of scale. But there's a sense of jazz and play, that they picked up on so wonderfully. And so it was great fun to be able to collaborate with the video as well as the orchestra.
Well, I think, I don't like to generalize, but Russians do have a sense of humor. I mean, they really, really do. And I think Barber was very sophisticated. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a person, he was extremely urbane and he really, really had an attitude. And I think he personifies life. So how was your experience with this whole, attitude towards American music? Is there an attitude? You were singing the words in English, obviously.
Sure. I didn't perceive that there was any sort of attitude about the music. I think music is music, and people throw themselves in, and they picked up on our energy as singers and working with a video about what we wanted to communicate. And the characters in this short opera are so well drawn that it's very clear to see what they're trying to express.
Now, when you again recorded, you just got up in front of the orchestra.
We did.
And what happened? I mean, a video, did you say a few words about it? And then, I mean, you were conducting.
Well, sure. Not too many words. That's a danger as a conductor. If you say too many words, even if everybody understands your language, they'll lose you.
This is could go on forever. And for anyone who is listening, you can always have access to some wonderful minds and artists at Westchester University. And, of course, here at Crossover, we welcome you back. And hopefully we will continue this discussion. Thank you so much for coming here today. And we look forward to the Barber celebration that will be going on not only on his birthday, but throughout the year.
Thank you.
Thank you.